Okay.
Pass that when you're done. Yeah, pass.
Hello, Radio Statler listeners. It's Stop A.
Yo, I'm Inverse Phase.
That's Inverse Phase. For the next hour, we will be the boys that make the noise, taking Jim Beam vertical.
Woohoo!
And we're going to be talking about stuff.
Stuff.
Okay, so
like stuff.
Let's get your talk out of the way before we spend like an
you
hour.
Mean the thing that I'm actually doing here?
Yeah. The thing you're doing. So. Yeah. Who are you and what do you do?
Who is your daddy?
What does he do?
So, I'm a chiptune guy. Like, I'm obsessed with old hardware. Obsessed with, 8-bits, 16-bit stuff. You know, like, I grew up with it. It raised me. And I want to make music with it. So, if it goes beep boop or maybe makes farty bass, I'm interested and that sort of a thing. So, I'm obsessed with, like, just all media and electronics from that era and whatever. I think it was a really exciting time, like, in just the development of electronics and whatever. And so my day job is literally, like, sitting around and trying to make something that sounds good and then sell it to people. Mm-hmm. Convince people that maybe they should get me to write their next game soundtrack or whatever, and convince people to stop asking me to do a Tool tribute album. Because I did a Nine Inch Nails tribute album, but that's the day job, and then the side gig or whatever is I'm trying to start a museum with all of that. I've got a ton of old hardware, computer console, even like random media stuff, I'm just trying to build a museum with it on a musician budget, which is great. But it seems to be working out. Like, I've met people that are willing to partner with me and people that are willing to give me some pretty incredible things. I have potentially the keyboard that led to the release of the Yamaha DX7, like, just sitting in my bedroom, like, and just, like, all sorts of weird, cool stuff. And I want to show it off. And, like, I mean, stuff like Commodore 64s. You know, I'm tired of, like, going to museums and seeing stuff under glass cases. I want to, like, teach kids how to, like, you know, type Lodestar, comma 8, comma 1. And,
sure.
You know, like, I want to, you know, like, get people interested in this in kind of the same way that I got interested in this.
What's the point of having old technology if you can't tinker with it?
Right. Dick with it and fall in love with it. And, you know, even if it's not, like, you know, I mean, a Commodore 64 isn't going to become your daily driver or anything as far as your computer goes, but like you're going to play some of the best games you've ever played, and you're going to feel a lot of heart and soul come out of those titles, and like, you know, some of the music, and even like some of the cracktros like at the beginning of the games that shouldn't even be there technically, but you know, like you're really going to get an insight into, you know, like the way it was in the 80s to like use a computer and to like be a part of this like emerging technology, like, holy shit, we have microprocessors, what do we do with them now?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So anyway, that my side gig is being excited about all the things that I'm already excited about, trying to build a museum about it, trying to educate others about it, and that kind of leads me to my talk, which is here at Hope.
And then your talk is about the demo scene. Could you go into a little bit about...
Yeah, so, well, I already touched on, you know, Commodore 64s and Cracktros, which is, you know, that little bit of extra that comes with your pirated game.
Well, okay, so let's step back.
Should we explain what cracking software is?
Yeah, so what is cracking software, and what did people do, the Cracktros and the demo scene, that made it stand out from just downloading something and, oh, now it works?
Well, that's the thing, is back then you didn't download something and now it works. I mean, sometimes you did, but most of the time, you know, someone would try to, you know, get sneaky and make it so that you can't copy Ms. Pac-Man or whatever, you know, and so you try to copy the disc, and various cool ways to try and, I don't know, make a disc uncopyable. One of the cool tricks, or at least, I don't know, it's kind of a standard trick, really, but one of my favorite tricks is you can put bad sectors on discs, like, intentionally,
mm-hmm.
and make it so that you can't, you know, like, read through. So, yeah, like, you're running a copy program or whatever, and it's like, this is bad. And, you know, some copy programs are smart enough to just go to the next sector and try to copy as much as they can, and then you get a mostly good copy of the disk, right? But
So how do you make intentionally bad sectors, like hardware or software?
Yeah, you use, like, a hardware copier or, you know, I mean...
No, but how do you actually make the sectors bad? Are they actually physically destroying a sector?
Are they
just setting it as bad?
They're not, like, putting mold on the disk or anything. Like, the way you would make an intentionally bad sector is the idea... of writing a floppy disk is you write bits, right?
No,
you're magnetizing bits on the disk.
I am a, what's it called? Trust me, I know. I'm at this con for a reason.
Well, tell me what you're talking about, and I'll tell you
what. So the question is, are they making a physical error or something that I can correct with FSCK?
So we're not even talking about computers that run Linux. Yeah. We're not talking about anything that you can fist.
This would be like this.
We're talking about an analog error on the disk. We're talking about a floppy disk that holds 170K on one side. And basically what you're supposed to do is copy either ones or zeros off of the disk to another disk, right?
Yeah.
So either the magnet is on or the magnet isn't on. And through that, you get what's on the disk, right? So what happens if you write something that's halfway in between? Or, the idea of a bad sector on a disk, right, is the disk slowly gets demagnetized and you can't figure out if it's a one or a zero. So what you can do is intentionally write something that's in between to the disk with like an analog copier.
Oh, okay.
And then
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and then the disk drive is like reading the disk and it's like, is it a one or a zero? And you hear it reread and, you know, whack, 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 going through the, you know, like that sounds like a duck. But anyway, I guess bad disks sound like a duck.
But here's, the thing is, though, it's like I said, even with modern hard disks, you still have...
Right, but we're not talking about hard disks.
Yeah, this was like copy protection.
Computers used to not have hard disks.
Oh, I'm aware. I was born in the early 80s. My first computer experience was, a 386 SX16. I'm familiar.
Like
you're talking about a computer with no hard disk.
Yeah.
How do you get your or even a computer with a hard disk, how do you get that software on that computer? You have to install it or something
With
off a floppy
disk.
Right,
yeah.
So...
And like, the same utilities, I mean, a lot will work with... You know, floppies.
Right. So the thing is a utility that copies a floppy says, hey, is that first bit on that disk a one or a zero? And then it copies it over to the next disk. And then it says, hey, is the next bit a one or a zero?
Yeah.
And it copies it to this. What happens when you get a half a voltage reading?
Yeah, then...
it has to either make a decision, or it has to, or the floppy,
throws
the drive, reads an error and then reports back to the operating system, I couldn't read that. So games would specifically be written to say, hey, read sector 17 on the disk. And if they got a zero, it's a bad disk. And if they got a one, it's a bad disk. And if the operating system said to the game, I couldn't read that, then you've got a genuine copy.
This would be pretty
cool
common.
Trick.
Like some of the earlier disk-based video game systems had copy protection like that, where it just, if you tried to copy it, you'd get a coaster out of the CD because there's stuff that just couldn't be copied. But that was the point.
It's actually kind of clever.
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, there's other stuff like, just tell me what word is in the manual on page 3, paragraph 5, word 6.
Oh, totally. What was that? Bugs was a game where,
tons of games.
It had,
a
100-page manual, so, you either had to have a photocopy of 100 pages or a little notebook filled with what the pictures were on every single page.
Right, yeah, or, Monkey Island had the code wheel, where it'd be, line up, this thing with that thing on the code wheel, and then whatever's in the window, pick that character off of the screen or... whatever. So I guess we're getting kind of OT, but the point is that people wanted to break these, and people wanted to copy the games, and people didn't want to have to deal with copy protection, so someone would pirate the game and break the copy protection, and then you'd end up with a game where you don't have to worry about the bad sector, or you don't have to worry about making a copy of the disk. You could copy the pirated version, and it would work fine.
In the case of
could just answer anything for the code wheel answer. You could type poop for, what the word is on, whatever page or whatever, and it would just work. So there's a bunch of, people that are, some of them maybe are not or would not lay claim to this, but, a bunch of geniuses figured out, if we just disassemble this code and look at where it's, checking to see if it's a genuine disk and just disable all of that stuff or remove the code or, change it so that it always, will return one when it says, is this a genuine copy or, any of those things, then we can just, copy the disk and it'll be fine. And so then, everyone starts leapfrogging each other where, the people that are trying to crack are, trying to stay a step ahead of the people that are writing more complicated copy protection. And you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And in the meantime, the people that, are breaking this copy protection are, maybe getting a big head. I know that I would if I would, figure out some cool algorithm or whatever, right? So then you either change the credits in the game or the high score table or something like that, so it has your initials instead of
sure.
The programmers, or Ms. Pac-Man by Namco becomes Ms. Pac-Man by Billy, or I don't know, whatever.
Just say that you did it.
Right, and then so eventually you end up with people that are just saying, I cracked this game. I'm awesome. I'm going to greet all of my friends. Greets go out to, blah, person 1, 2, 3. And by the way, call my BBS and you can get more pirated games that you download and get some images for your discs and, you know, that sort of a thing. And like, so they started making intros to the game that wasn't really necessarily an intro to the game, although notably Eaglesoft would review, well, and I mean a lot of people would do this, but I kind of was amused because Eaglesoft was a cracking group that would leave like a little review of the game, like, you know, this is the Maniac Mansion Eaglesoft thing is like, you know, this is a great LucasArts title or Lucasfilm title. You know, if you liked Rescue on Fractalus, then you're going to love this, and, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, like, quotes Rush lyrics and stuff. You get, like, a real personality sort of thing, like, of the person that's cracking the game.
All the different crews had, like, their own style, maybe their own style of music, maybe their own style of, like, graphics and the intros. The thing that really always stood out to me was with like, the key generators where, you know, old-school software would give you, like, I don't know, like, a 10-digit alphanumeric code, and then you would put in your own code.
Be sure to register your software.
Yeah, of course. So what you would do is you'd, like, go on a BBS and you would see, I don't know, like, Adobe Dreamweaver CS4 KeyGen or whatever.
FNet, FSERS.
So we ended up with these intros at the beginning of software, and, I mean, KeyGens are living on... they're basically the new Cracktros because there are no floppy disks anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and shit like that. So, you know, we had these Cracktros, and people kind of just got bored of cracking software eventually. Like, you know, I mean... You know, the copy protection didn't get better in certain packages. And, you know, like, so we were just like, okay. I mean, the community at large, you know, decided, well, you know, like, what, like, the reason this crack intro is just like a logo bouncing around the screen, a little chiptune and some scroll text, is because, like, we only had, like, 8K to work with because the game was taking up the rest of the disc. So
sure, yeah.
What are we going to do, like, if we don't have a game to crack? Suddenly we have an entire disc that we could just fill with, like, cool shit. And so everyone was like, well, maybe we should try that. And, you know, I mean, there's sort of an interim bit where, you know, people were like, well, you know, these games don't take up the entire disc. They only take half of the disc. So we could either put two games on one disc or we could do something really special and cool and just kind of include it on the disc and see if people notice. You know, a lot of disk swapping going on in the 80s, so that was fine. You know, and so slowly these things got around, and people, you know, like, were figuring out how to do cooler and cooler things with, you know, like, their 8 or 16-bit micro or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
I recall. We ended up in the demo world instead, where we would see, like, 5-minute music videos that is just like, this is a cool thing that I figured out how to do. You know, watch some spinning cubes and some Taurus stuff
and
whatever.
That's what I was gonna say, yeah. Like, you'd start to see, like, people simulating, like, 4-dimensional cubes using, like, basic code or something like that.
Right.
And
like, it actually ran quick.
Yeah, with polygons flipping around the screen where there wasn't even, like, a crack. Like, it transcended that whole software pirating thing, and it was just people doing it because they thought it was cool and not, like, because we have extra space and let's...
And not only were people doing it because they thought it was cool, but people were consuming it and thought it was cool because, like, I mean, even on some of the Cracktros, people were like, the music in the Cracktro is, like, better than the music in the game in some cases.
Okay, so just before we move on, we're going to go to a different topic, but I just want to play some people what, KeyGen music sounds like.
Some of this. Yeah.
This is actually for Creative Suite 4 version 10, and this was a song for a KeyGen, so let's see if I blow out people's ears with this.
It's good volume.
Yeah, perfect volume. And you'll see, like, you guys can't see this, but it's only, like, maybe 30 lines of MIDI code long, and it's repeated in a way
Don't call it MIDI.
Sorry.
It's okay.
What is the correct term?
Tracker music.
Tracker music. So it's only about 30 lines long, but the way it's written gives it the illusion that it's pushing out new things as you're listening to it, correct? Well,
so the other thing that you might not be noticing is up here in the corner you see an order.
Yeah.
How long is the order? It says length right next to it.
Length. 12.
12. So you've got 12 patterns.
12.
That's either decimal or hexadecimal. So what you're looking at in the screen in the main area right there that's moving is each pattern. Oh. So you've got 12 separate patterns that, you know, like when you get to the bottom, it's not repeating, it's going to the top of the next pattern.
I see.
So you've got, you know, it's probably actually, does it say 3F at the bottom of the, you know, like the typical...
3, correct.
Okay, so the typical pattern is 64 notes long.
Okay.
And it's stepping through them, like what Stop A is looking at is basically, it looks like a spreadsheet with a play button.
Hex code.
You know, for lack of a better way to put it. And so you step through all 64 notes, and by the way, 64 divides into 4/4 music really well.
True.
So, you know, like, you can basically write, like, a little tune that's really easy to write. In this sort of a, you know, like, kind of a halfway between coder and music format. And the reason this is a really useful format is because the commands and the notes and the instrument numbers that you like correspond to are really easier for a programmer, easy for a programmer to understand, but also translates directly to what is going out to the computer's sound chip very directly.
Okay.
So this is like kind of a low-level music code kind of way of writing music.
Like the exact waveforms are going out.
But you can look at this, and I mean, I do workshops where I teach people to do this in an hour.
You'll like sit there, once and you could look at this and know exactly what's going to come out.
Right. And once you get it, like, you look at it, and you're like, oh, holy shit, this is, like, way too much. And, like, after about 15, 30 minutes, you're like, I think I see what's going on. And, you know, like, by the end of the hour of, like, most of the panels I do, everyone's like, yep, I get it. I'm going to go write some music because this looks really fun.
Okay, so you said that when you were young, like you tinkered with stuff and got into this. Like, what was, like, your first experience with, like technology and computing? Like,
oh, my God.
Like, what got you hooked?
God. I learned to read when I was, like, two. I think my first word was Sears. I read it off the back of the toilet or some shit.
Uh-huh.
No pun intended. But, you know, like, I don't know. I was able to read soon, right? And my dad was an editor in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So he would bring home a compact portable, you know, like, which is like, it looks like a piece of like luggage or a sewing machine or whatever, a keyboard flips out of the front, predecessor to the laptop, really.
Was it the one where like it had like a small CRT in it almost?
Yep, okay. CRT and two floppy drives next to it. It looks
yep.
like an Osborne or a K-Pro
yep,
or whatever.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So
sure.
The PC version of that. And he was like, well, you know, I assume I should probably maybe ask my parents about this, but they were like, shit, well, the kid can read. Why don't we, like, you know, get some, like, computer games that have something to do with learning? And, you know, I got the like, light or, you know, not quite Reader Rabbit. I got something called Easy Reader.
Mm-hmm.
I just went to fucking town on it. You know, like, I went through all the levels or whatever of Easy Reader, and I just ate it up. And there was some math. I think there was a little bit of math stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it, like, vividly, but I remember, like, just always wanting to play more and whatever, and I, like, entered kindergarten with, like, a fifth-grade reading level or something, and the teacher, like, had to call my mom into a parent-teacher conference because I was going to be different. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But that was really fun. But anyway, the point is, you know, after I messed with all of those, well, you know, I ran out of stuff to play, so my dad would, you know, like, download games from BBSs and, you know, got some shareware.
So is that where you, like,
whatever.
Learned what BBSs were from your dad?
Yeah. My dad and I, like, when I was, like, four, you know, would sit in front of the compact. We had, we were rocking at 1,200 baud.
What was the time frame of this, like, year range?
Early 80s.
Okay.
So, you know, like, we had a 1,200 baud modem, and my dad just sat me down with, God, what did we have, I don't even remember what we were using for comm software. It'll come to me. But, you know, he sat down, he's like, hey, you know, like, you plug the computer into the phone line, you know, we can talk to other computers. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, you know,
yeah.
My brain was just like, you know,
yeah.
I'm four, sure.
Sure. Why wouldn't it work that way? Yeah.
And, you know, it made sense and, like, logged onto BBSs. And, of course, I could read. So, you know, like, even at four, I'm, like, watching words fly by and whatever. And, like, I'm about to go into kindergarten. With this reading level or whatever, but I'm just, like, reading stuff and, you know, watching. He's like, so we could, like, you know, put a blank disk in the other drive and we can save things from the other computer. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I'm four. You know, but, like, so, you know, I did a lot of smile and nodding, but I just kind of, like, took it as fact, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, this is a thing you can do. Obviously, it's a thing you can still do. You just don't do it the same way. We did a whole lot of that, and I ended up with a bunch of games written in BASIC, which were, you know, like, pretty easy, quick downloads,
mm-hmm.
And that sort of a thing. And
Gorilla, like, and Snake,
yeah,
and whatnot?
Well, before that, because Gorillas was something that came with QBASIC,
yeah.
And we're talking GW BASIC. I'm a little bit older. So, you know, like, my dad showed me how to run these games and whatever, and eventually I was, you know, like, he felt comfortable, you know, leaving his, like, little kid, you know, with the computer to run games and, you know, confirm that I wouldn't, like, eat the keyboard or whatever because I was that young.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I had this game. I don't remember what it was, but it was kind of like Star Raiders for the Atari where you're, like, flying around and, you know, like, shooting ships and whatever. And it had kind of a faux 3D view or whatever. And I was like, man, this game is too hard. and I knew how to stop the game. And I, yeah, I just started like typing random shit. It was written in BASIC, so I just started typing random crap into BASIC because I knew I typed run to run the game, and I was like, okay, well, I heard there are other things like load and save that you could type, and started figuring those out, and realized that GW BASIC had a really basic help thing and whatever, and figured out a list, and then I was like, list? Oh, hold on. And started looking at all the code, and yeah, I mean, it's written in BASIC, so like a kid can understand.
Oh yeah,
this shit.
Pretty easy.
So I found where the difficulty setting was asked for, and made it so you could enter difficulty 0 instead of difficulty 1 through 9 or whatever, because 1 was too hard for me, even though it was like the easiest thing.
Yeah.
And I realized that the number of ships was generated directly from, you know,
it's like a multiplier,
right? So like 0 just
zero
like the
ships.
Game worked, but 0 ships were generated, so you couldn't like get to the next level because you couldn't shoot anything because there's nothing to shoot. So eventually, you know, I got into BASIC programming or whatever, and I learned that there was a play command, and play in BASIC, basically you put a bunch of numbers and letters in a string. And you can do like E3, which is E for three durations, and like O4 would change to octave 4 and stuff like that. And this is a language called Music Markup Language, MML. And most computer or like chiptune people or whatever consider this to be hard mode. But some people find it very easy because there are also like these days MML has macros and a lot of things to make it really simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. But I learned MML, and I was doing that for a couple of years or whatever, and I ended up...
So, like, how soon was this after you started, like...
I was, like, 5 or 6 or something like that.
Tinkering with sound files, making the music sound different.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, God, I remember a couple things. Definitely, like, this is not when I was 5 or 6, but I remember being obsessed with, like, NES and Super Nintendo games and just trying to run or write... you know, like crappy single channel PC speaker versions of like, you know, the games that
like copying, you know, like, the music?
Yeah, like just hearing the music and like trying to rewrite it so that I could listen to it on my, you know, like shitty compact portable.
Now, as time went on, like did you like in your schooling, did you focus on music or were you focusing on technology or just something completely different?
I mean, so we're fast forwarding what, to like college and high school and stuff?
Let's say like high school, because like You're right. Tinkering and copying music by ear at like,
yeah, when I was
elementary school age, yeah. So then,
so you have like bullshit music classes in elementary where the music teacher visits you in third grade or whatever, and you like you
There's
learn
no
to sing and they tell you, you know, like do re
mi
and stuff. And then eventually, I ended up in junior high. I took 7th grade general music, which is just like kind of more of a music history class, although they like. Teach you to play the recorder and a few other things, but it's mostly like, you know, this is the Baroque period, etc. You know, I went through that and I was already writing music at that point, like original music. I found it interesting, you know, I was into it, but like I have no talent for playing musical instruments, and I even don't like really read music like the way people do. I literally, the tracker is what I use. By the time I took that class, I was already like listening to mods and writing music in a tracker and whatever. Because immediately after the MML period of my life or whatever you want to call it, I went to a computer show with my dad because I was going to build my first computer ever, and I bought some parts from this guy. It was a 286 that ran at 20 megahertz, and you know, I wanted like a meg of RAM, and I could only afford CGA at the time, and I could only afford a 5 1/4. I couldn't get a 3 1/2, and you know, like one of our family friends or whatever is going to sell me his old 30 meg hard drive, you know, and stuff like that. And I basically built, you know, I went to the booth and I told this guy everything that was going to go in the machine. I was like, I need a hard disk controller, but I don't need a hard drive, you know, that sort of a thing. And I start talking to the guy. And he's like, okay, you know, come back in an hour. I don't know if you've ever been to a computer show or whatever.
The first computer show I went to, I was in 1999.
Okay.
So by then, like, 56K modems were the standard. Like,
I mean,
LCD screens were just invented.
In the late 90s, the computer show is basically, like, a whole bunch of computer stores get together to run, like, a bazaar sort of a thing.
You know, I mean, there were still, you saw, like, this is the dude that sells RAM, and, like, this is where you could find, like, all spare parts. But it wasn't, like, everything was the shape that it was supposed to fit in, and other than, like, the IRQ settings, it was very easy to build a computer in the late 90s.
Right.
Versus, I feel like, in the 80s, where, like, you needed to get the right parts from the right person. Like, you couldn't just walk in there and be like, this fits in that slot, it'll be fine. Like,
I mean, some of that was okay. The clone market was very much alive by the time I made it into a computer show, yeah. I went to some in the 80s, but the thing is in the 80s, you know, computer shows were really ham fests, or more often were ham fests. So you go to a ham fest and people would just happen to also have computers and also have games. Mm-hmm. Not like a lot of Atari games and stuff like that back then. But basically, you know, like the beginning of the 90s rolls around. And I go to this computer show with my dad. And, you know, I'm talking to this guy, giving him the spec of, like, you know, what 286 boards do you have around, because I can't afford a 386, and, you know, I'm just a kid, and I got, like, all my birthday money, and I just want to, like... And so we picked out a 286-20, which was really actually quite blazing for a 286, and, you know, picked out a card and whatever, and he's like, all right, come back in an hour, and, like, I was like, do you mind if I build that? And he's like, looking at me, and I'm just like this little, like, you know, 10, 11, whatever year old... and he, like, shoots my dad, like, a, you know, I'm not a babysitter, you know, face or whatever. My dad, like, just kind of shrugs at him, and he lets me build the computer. And, I mean, you know, like, building computers hasn't changed a whole lot in that, you know, like, it's basically a 30-minute to an hour build job or whatever. And I already knew where things go and whatever, so I just built the computer in front of him. And, you know, he gave me, like, a little bit of help and whatever. And he was like, how old are you again? And he's like, come back when you're 16. You know, and... you know, I had my computer, but the whole time I was there, and this is like, I mean, that's, I consider that to be an important part of, like, my, you know, computer knowledge or computer history or whatever, but the whole time I'm sitting at that table, there's a guy at, like, a shareware of the month club or whatever across the table, or across, like, across the alley or aisle or whatever from us.
Yeah.
And this guy has a 386 with a sound card, and, like, this is the beginning of, like, the Sound Blaster era right here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, holy shit, that computer can play CNC Music Factory, you know, like, that kind of an attitude, you know, or whatever, so, you know, I'm just, like, freaking out, like, watching this computer play, watching, you know, like, the guy had VGA, so, you know, like, the mod player had, like, oscilloscopes and, you know, like, spectrum analyzer, and, you know, like, it was just awesome, so I'm, like, completely enamored by this the entire time I'm building my computer. And, like, my dad, you know, took notice or whatever, and I ended up getting, you know, a Sound Blaster clone for Christmas that year. So, immediately after getting, you know, my Sound Blaster clone or whatever, you know, I call up the Shareware of the Month Club, or, you know, whatever shareware company it was or whatever, and I was like, hey, I'd really like some of that music you were playing at, you know, the computer show in the Netherlands. And, you know, like, talk to the guy or whatever. As like, I only have CGA. Do you know if, that, like, that will run without VGA and whatever? And he's like, I have no idea. I was like,
believe it or not, the first computer show that I went to was at the Meadowlands. I mean, a decade later, but...
I mean, so Market Pro runs a whole bunch of shows there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think I was at a Market Pro show, but I don't know because I was, like, 11.
I'm going to pause you for a second, just in case anyone's wondering. The song playing in the background is the Crack 4 Clone CD 3.5.0.
Nice.
okay, so...
So anyway, at that point, I started writing mods,
mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, really got into that. And that's, like, the birth of mods. Like, 1987 to 1989 was, like, you know, mods just happened right here. And
so you kind of at, like, you were there from, like, the very, like,
start of
the scene. Yeah.
You know, sampled computer music or whatever. So, you know, your question was, you know, in school, where did you focus and whatever? And so, like, you know, I was already, like, writing mods and that sort of a thing and whatever, and I went into seventh grade and took the general music class and whatever, and went through eighth grade, and I was continuing to write stuff. And I actually my friends from school and I, like, wrote a bunch of games, and I did, like, original music for the games and whatever. And yeah, I mean, for a 13-year-old, I suppose it was great, but, you know, like, it wasn't really that great, I guess. And in ninth grade, I just kind of got bored of school. Like, I wasn't into it. And I was in an area where ninth grade was your freshman year, but it was at the end of junior high. So they did
mine
7 to 9,
same.
10 to 12.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm effectively at the top of the class or whatever, you know, in this, like, junior high school. And my science teacher looks at me and she's like, you're really bored, aren't you? Like, maybe we can figure out some sort of, like, independent study thing or something like that. So I was like, all right, so what are your requirements? And she was like, well, you know, replace biology with something science-related. So, like, I wrote a game for my ninth grade year for, like, you know, she wanted, like, a sort of final project or a final report type thing. And, you know, like, I flipped through a magazine, and I saw Mario's Picross for the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, kind of enamored by this, and I was like, well, I don't have a Game Boy, and I can't afford one, and, you know, whatever. And I asked for one for, like, Christmas previously and never got it, and whatever. So I just wrote the game from scratch. You know, like, and even wrote, like, my own mouse driver for it. And
uh-huh.
there were audio, almost audio drivers or whatever. I could do really basic ad lib stuff, which was still light years ahead from PC speaker music in theory. And, you know, got into that and got into the mod thing. And then my other class that I was really, like, bored with was English, which didn't really have a parallel. Like, I taught myself, I don't know, a half a year of German or something like that. But in the meantime, the band teacher took notice or whatever, and he was like, well, why don't you know, like, play with my Mac and play with this MIDI software or whatever. And so I didn't, like, really have, like, a music education. He just kind of threw me at a Mac with some MIDI software.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote some stuff, and they ended up playing it at a band concert, which was neat.
Really? That's
but,
cool.
But I hated the environment. I really loved my tracker environment, and I really loved my programming environments and whatever. So after that happened, even though that was, like, a really cool experience, and I really, you know, I mean, I liked it. But, you know, like, I really wanted to go back to writing tracker music. So throughout all of high school, I didn't take any band classes. I didn't take any, you know, like, music classes. I didn't do any of that. And I just wrote games with my friends and did soundtracks and just got better at that. And then college was, for me, college was kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I managed to graduate or skip classes or whatever and get into C++ because, you know, like, I had already taken, you know, like, C, Pascal, and Basic, and whatever in high school, and they actually offered those, which was cool. But, you know, I was totally into, like, Turbo Pascal and Assembler, and then they tried to teach me C, and I was like, I kind of like Pascal a little bit more, and then, you know, Pascal just died.
Died a horrible death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you know, I was like, okay, I'll take C++, and I'll try to learn this object thing and whatever, and I ended up, like, teaching my C++ class in college and paying to do it. Because my, like, our professor just, like, didn't care. So I helped everyone pass that class, and then I dropped out of school. Went and got IT jobs, and, you know, just kind of became a part of, like, the computer enthusiast scene, mm-hmm. or whatever. And that's, yeah, I mean, the rest is sort of history.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've just been into computers and had weird computer jobs and dipped back from that, got involved with MagFest for about 10 years. And that was, like, my day job for a while, and then backed off from that, and my like, part-time database job or whatever laid off everyone except for the supervisors, and so then I was like, okay, what am I doing now? And I had already become, like, a chiptuner with, like, album releases and everything. I was like, all right, I've been meaning to do some Nine Inch Nails tributes for a while, and so I did the entire first Pretty Hate Machine album of Nine Inch Nails, you
mm-hmm.
know, like, That was a lot of fun, and I guess I got some internet notoriety for that. It was neat. And just kind of kept on going with it for a little while. You know, people will hear, you know, a chiptune or something, like, online, some cover I did or whatever, and become a fan, and
uh-huh.
eventually you'll get an email like, hey, I'm writing, like, you know, a Nintendo Switch game that looks like an old NES game. You know, you think you could maybe, like, write some authentic
really?
NES
How
music.
Many, like, games have you done soundtracks for?
Actually, shout-outs to a new challenger who's doing something called Treachery and Beatdown City, because he just put me up last night.
Uh-huh.
but he's working on a game that will come out on Switch, like, real soon now, and Steam, and some other stuff. So I got that gig. There's a game called Slime Son that's, like, all over the place and all the, like, game stores and app stores and Steam and, like, Switch, PS4, I think Xbox, and, you know, like, whatever, and they got me to write their boss music.
Oh, that's cool.
And then they got me to master the entire soundtrack, and we released it on 2X vinyl LP.
Oh, that's cool.
Kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's kind of interesting that, like, I don't know if it's, like, a false nostalgia for, like, the 80s, but, like, you see, like, a lot of, like, not re-releases, but releases of games that are, like, at least reminiscent in terms of, like, gameplay and soundtracks of, like, of stuff that...
Well, nostalgia is powerful, dude. You know, I mean...
But I feel like a lot of the people consuming these games may have not been around for that nostalgia.
Perhaps. You know, I definitely get, like, you know, I like to stay away from the term 8-bit, mm-hmm. Because the computers that render some of that video or audio or, you know, like, whatever might have been 8-bit, but, like, actually, most sound chips in 8-bit computers accept 4-bit amplitude values, so they're actually, it's, like, 4-bit sound, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, whatever. And, you know, if you take all the channels and sum them together and, like, whatever, and divide it, you end up with, like, 5.6 or... you know, 6.2-bit or something uh-huh. like that, right? But the point is just that, you know, like, you know, if you say 8-bit to a kid right now, they'll probably be like, oh, like Minecraft, which, like,
yeah,
sure,
yeah.
there are, like, you know, pixelated-looking things in Minecraft, but Minecraft is more of a, like, voxel environment.
Voxel, yeah.
And voxels aren't really an 8-bit thing, even. You know, it's just limited palette. Like, people see limited palette, limited soundscape, limited stuff, and they just, like, instantly assume, like, assign the term 8-bit,
mm-hmm.
And that sort of a thing. But anyway, back to your question is basically, like, okay, so do kids get it now? And I think the answer is not usually, but sometimes. And those are really cool moments when people do, like, at MAGFest more than a couple years ago, I met this dude, he was like 15, 16, something like that, and he came up to me and started talking to me about this, like, little tiny museum room that I was running at MAGFest at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, oh man, I'm so glad you brought the MSX, like, that's really cool. And I'm, like, thinking, like, does he even know what an MSX is? And he's like,
can you, what is an MSX?
An MSX is a joint effort between Microsoft and ASCII Corporation, not ASCII as in, like, I mean, it's spelled the same way as ASCII text, but it's not like there is a company behind ASCII. In Japan, to release basically like a Japanese Commodore 64-like machine.
Okay.
You know, the machines should have somewhere around 16, 32, 64, whatever K of RAM. And then there was an MSX2 that had, you know, like a further on requirement. And they were all supposed to have the same video chip, and they were all supposed to have the same sound chip and that sort of a thing. But anyone could build one. The design was open.
Mm-hmm.
So that, think like a VCR, right? Like, as long as it accepts that tape and plays the tape a certain way, you can put VHS on it.
It follows a standard.
Right. So they wanted to do the same thing for computers. And they did. And so, like, I was like, this kid can't possibly, like, know what an MSX is. And then he's like, and dude, like, where did you get your X68000? Which is like, okay, so now I'm being, like, asked by a person that was born after the X68000 came out, and it's already, like, an obscure random Japanese piece of computer kit. Like, you know, some people call it, like, the Japanese Amiga or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're talking about, you know, a computer that came out in, like, 1987 or whatever. And this computer is, you know, has, like, I don't know, a meg of RAM, 2 floppy drives, a YM2151, and it's basically, like, a late 80s, early 90s arcade machine with 2 floppy drives.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many, like, perfect arcade ports for it and whatever, and this is, like, the thing it's famous for. Even though it was supposed to be, like, a development workstation, it ended up being, like, a pro-level gaming computer.
Uh-huh.
And
for
so,
its
like,
time.
How does,
did,
yeah.
did you ask the kid how
I was
did
like,
he know?
How do you know about this? And, like, why are you, like, who are you? You know, like, and he's like, so I'm really into Castlevania. I collect everything related to Castlevania. And I decided that, you know, I was so fascinated with, like, all this, like, weird Japanese stuff that I was an origin, you know, like, the origin of Castlevania and whatever. So I learned about all of these computers because I thought it was interesting and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, like, here I am talking shop with someone that's easily, like, you know, four, five, six years younger, or even more, you know, than, like, an X68000, and yet knows everything about it and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, you know, every so often, like, you know, maybe one person every event or every other event, I run into something, like, you know, or someone like that and whatever, and they've got this, like, burning level of desire to learn about retro, and, like, that just, that makes me super happy. You know, whoever... if that dude is listening, he knows who he is. I don't want to, like, divulge his identity uh-huh. or, you know, whatever.
Rat him out to the rest of the world that he's a old-school computer nerd.
Yeah, well, it's probably already outed, but, you know, but...
They know already.
Anyway, you know, so I guess, you know, like, that was the extremely long version of saying, I don't think the kids know, but the kids that do know really give me hope for the future. Like...
So, you're performing at the Chiptunes concert?
I am not.
You're not. You're
I know,
witnessing its greatness.
Like everyone that's playing, you know, like we're a very small community.
Yeah. Now, do you
and
do
there a lot of
performances
really,
with that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now,
I don't really know, like, I'm
is
not
it
good
live?
At playing an instrument.
Do you hit play and then bounce around?
A little bit. I'm actually also not very bouncy on stage. My my energy level is sort of towards chill. Like medium chill.
Can we play some
of
your music that you've
sure,
done?
If you want.
Where how can I find it?
Bandcamp probably.
So we're gonna
inversephase.com and click Bandcamp.
And then Clint, because
that's probably a good
okay
way to go. Play something off of I don't know Shuttle Scuttle. Bam. It's like my early NES stuff. Or if you want some farty bass, you can listen to Genesis of Consequence.
Okay, so we're going to look at...
Those two are good.
That's clever.
Like Genesis stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, that's clever. Okay, yeah. So just hit play
the
on the
of
first
a decision.
One.
Yeah, you could play, or play, I don't know, play...
Do the choice? Oh, here we go.
Play Pinch It Off.
Pinch It Off.
Yes, that is a poop joke.
Okay, let's get some volume up in this. And now, what did you write this on?
The Windows Chime is not part of that song.
No.
This is Sega Genesis.
So, like, you wrote this on a Sega Genesis?
I wrote it in a PC tracker that looks like Milky Tracker, called Devil Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can output it to, like, Sega Genesis
A Genesis
ROMs
sound chip or something like that?
Yeah. Well, it has an emulator kind of crammed up its ass,
okay.
For lack of a better way to put it. But then you can make real ROMs and, like, put it on a cartridge and whatever. So I'm actually working on taking this whole album... and making
a
real
ROM?
Sega Genesis cartridge.
Oh, that's cool.
And some people have already pre-ordered it and everything. I'm really sorry to the people that are listening that are waiting for it. I promise it'll be done soon.
Is there like a Kickstarter? I want an album on a cartridge.
It's
right
there.
You have a store?
Like.
Okay, wait. Buy now. Is that the $42
the
option?
Yeah. I really need to hit that limit before I can afford to print the boards is part of the problem.
So you need 32 of them?
Yeah.
How many do you have?
I don't know. It should say how many are remaining. Or does
Edition
it not?
Of 32.
Oh, it
now.
Doesn't say.
No.
I'm probably about halfway there.
Halfway there. So 32, like, you'll get what the board printed, and then...
Yeah. I mean, you can just put... Like, Genesis games are very easy to print. I do need to...
Really?
Yeah, I need a coder, which is... probably the hardest part, to be honest. You know, I can output the ROM for each of the songs or, you know, the instructions or whatever, but I want to package them all together in something nice that, you know, like,
some type of menu
has a menu and some animations and some
Has anyone else put out something of, like,
yes.
similar?
There are several.
Interesting.
Yeah. Shout out. Actually, someone playing tonight, Animal Style, or Animal Stool, if you want to, you know, remove some letters. Joey's really cool and has put out some stuff. There are a bunch. Just look up like cartridge album chiptune or something
and
on
you can
Google
find them.
And you'll, there's like 10 or 20.
The album that you have retro covered. Oh,
so
retro covered.
Yeah.
The art for it. I'll just describe it because people can't see it because we're on the radio. But it's like
it's a show.
It's like a show.
It's a picture of the concert hall with me playing
in like a above kind of like a 2D like a angled.
Isometric
view looks super nifty. There was a year, man, I want to say it was like 4 years ago, where, do you recall like the ASCII art that people do on BBSs?
Oh, sure.
Our website,
did some of it.
Our website was based around like ASCII art.
Oh, cool.
We just like reached out on Twitter and this guy made something that was really cool. We ended up turning all the ASCII art into images and then using the images for the site, but,
yeah, anyway. I guess Firefox can't render like the ANSI stuff.
No,
anymore.
Not all the characters, fortunately. Let's listen to what's a good one from this one.
Pick the last
Duke,
track.
Wait, what's Duke NES?
That Duke Nessum 3D is the Duke Nukem 3D channel or like intro track or whatever on the NES.
I have to hear that.
All right. Also, some voice samples from the man himself. John St. John's a really nice guy, so I hit him up and I was like, "Hey, I'm doing a cover of the Duke Nukem theme. You think I could get some stuff and like render it out of a Nintendo and process it and whatever?" And so
and
he recorded
like, cool?
the samples from
wow.
scratch, so that we could get them to sound the right way and you know like get them into the right.
Wait, I need to hear those again. Wait, let's go back.
Actually, go to the very end. Like, go to, like, 15 seconds or whatever from the end, or... And just wait.
Oh, it's like a hidden track?
Well, sort of, yeah. It's supposed to be the end of the CD. It's coming.
I've got about 11 seconds left. The Nintendo Entertainment System. Your parents help you hook it up.
Now, we're playing with power. That's so awesome. I just got him. I was like, we should record some, like, random ass, you know, like, Nintendo sayings from the 80s. And...
Okay,
he's,
so
he's a trooper. He's really fun to hang around, and I usually try to get a drink with him if I run into him at a convention. He goes to MAGFest a lot, or used to go to MAGFest a lot, so that helps.
Okay, so we've got 5 minutes left. I'm just going to play out, right? This hour went so I could talk for another hour.
Do we have someone else?
Yeah, someone's coming up right after us, unfortunately. So I'm going to play us out with some of your music, but
sure.
Can you... pitch any pitches you want to pitch?
Pitches. Hey, follow me on all the things. And, you know, all go to inverseface.com and click on everything on inverseface.com and then click on all the follow buttons, blah, blah, blah. Come to my talk if you're here at Hope tomorrow night at 2300. That's 11 p.m. I'm going to give a talk for about an hour on, you know, like, hey, here's where this, like, demo scene, art scene, chiptune scene, motion video scene. I mean, I explained, like, a little bit of it, right? But,
yeah.
Like, I'll give a much broader overview of how we got there. And then we're going to go straight into what is that scene like and where is it now and what are some of the productions that people are bringing forth, because after that hour's up, I have two more hours where we're just going to screen demos. So basically, we're just going to sit around and watch demo scene productions. I promise I'll try not to ruin it too much, but I'm going to pause a couple of the demos and be like, hey, look at this. This is impressive. This is why. You know, and then, like, unpause, you know, and that sort of thing.
What room are you going to be in?
It will be in Vaughn, the big room
the
upstairs.
The big room,
yeah.
That's going to be scary.
Well, I, you know, I mean, these are productions that are meant to be shown on a big screen. Like, the demo scene has parties as big as Hope. Or almost, where they actually compete for, like, cash money.
Awards and prizes.
With the best, you know, like, multimedia presentation. So they show them on a big projector with a big audio system. Everything's very pro. So, you know, like, when I was arranging to do the talk, I was like, well, you know, like, we should really show these, you know, as brightly and as loudly as possible so that we can truly, you know, like, give people the feel like they're at a demo party or whatever.
Cool.
They're obviously not at a demo party, but...
You're going to bring it to them.
Right, exactly. I want to bring them some of the experience. So, you know, I mean, it's going to be very laid back. It'll be informal. People can ask questions. You know, people can be like, show this demo and maybe I'll have it. You know, stuff like that. But I really want to see... I want people to see, you know, like... 3D graphics on Ataris and, like, you know, lossless audio playback on, like, a Commodore 64 and, like, even, like, some of the modern scene is still... I'm really impressed by the retro scene because I'm addicted to the retro scene, but, like, some of the modern demos that people are putting out, they have, like, 5-10 minute music videos. I mean, they're effectively music videos. They're demos.
Yeah.
They're algorithmically generated. You're not allowed to store movies. You're not allowed to store animations.
Oh, like, okay.
This is real math and real 3D going on these, like, you know, or whatever... In 64K, we can do 10 minutes of audio and video. A screenshot from the demos takes up more space
than
the entire demo.
Interesting.
You know, like, so this is, like, what makes this fascinating to me. You know, like, there's one that's 4K that, like, lasts 3.5 minutes.
Like,
and
yeah.
It's good. Like, I mean, you know, like, you can watch it and be like, that was a cool piece of art. You know, like... So I want people to really, you know, like, get those experiences.
Get cool. I'm really looking forward to it. I appreciate you coming on the air.
Yeah.
I think
had a lot of fun.
Side Pockets coming up, and then you're welcome back on anytime.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for coming out.
Great to see you.
Mic is still on. I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm just gonna.
My microphone is on. You can't stop me.
Can't keep me off the air.
Dude, fight the man. Stay here as long as you can.
Fight the power!
See if Sidebot wants to get back on.
It's fine. Oh, and while there's no one in the room, if you want a CD, come and find me. I'm wearing a Pretty 8 Machine shirt. I'll sell you some CDs for cheap. Make me an offer. Lol. Well,